glad you're here. Fellowship's sweeter knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you.
Welcome to Mark and Friends for Thursday, September 26th, 2024. I'm your host, Donna Leland. Today we're spending time with Tom Hampson, and we met him through the Illinois Family Institute. Tom has been used greatly in the area of helping bring down those who would steal the innocence of our children. Thank you so much, Tom, for being on Mark and Friends.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Tom, I understand you did work for the state of Illinois, and you did some investigation. What was your role?
I was the chief investigator for the Illinois Legislative Investigating Commission. During that time, we did an eight-year investigation into the sexual exploitation of children, which was the most extensive law enforcement investigation into that subject that's ever been done. Even to this day, it was more extensive than anything that's been done. And so I developed an interest in child protection issues, in preventing the sexual exploitation of children. And then toward the end of my career, I had a private investigation agency, and I wound up being hired by the state of Illinois to investigate the predator priests back in the early 2000s after the scandal that was disclosed by the Boston Globe. So after that investigation, I realized that some of the things that we thought we had been able to deal with back in the 70s when I did the investigation for the state had not been corrected, that the problem was a lot bigger than we thought it was. And so I started the Truth Alliance Foundation to come up with a better way to spot predators and keep them away from kids, and to teach people how to tell the difference between good guys and bad guys, which is what I do. That's one of the things that I do anyway.
When you realized that more work needed to be done, what did you figure out and what did you uncover?
Well, one of the things is that one of the early things that we found out when we did the investigation for the state was there was a need for child pornography laws, which we helped draft the first child pornography law in the state of Illinois. There also was multiple agencies got involved in child sexual exploitation, and that none of the agencies were coordinated. So we developed the initial enabling legislation for what's now become known as the Child Advocacy Center. So there were none when we did it back in the 70s. And the third thing was that we discovered, much to our surprise, these predators were not loners like we thought they were. They actually were very... They tended to be very social. They tended to look for other kinds of, look for predators, like-minded predators that they could interact with, that they could exchange pictures with and ideas. So they were really much more social than we thought they were. So what that did was that led us to a way to go after them, which is still used today. So the sting that you see on the internet about enticing guys into a relationship with what they think is a 12 or a 13 year old girl. We started that using classified ads in magazines, in the porno magazines that were around back in those days. Those are the main things that we did that we developed during those days, and they're still in use today. So I think one of the things that I've acquired over the years is that virtually all of these guys that are preferential child molesters, where they have their primary interest in children, virtually all of them are psychopaths. And so they're very difficult to identify. Less than 2% of them ever get caught. So that background investigations don't do an adequate job of screening them out. You have to figure out another way to identify who the bad guys are, and that's one of the things that I've done with my organization, the Truth Alliance Foundation. We developed a chart that you can use to help see the red flags that would keep you from hiring somebody that might be a problem for children.
Walk us through some of those red flags and show us the difference between someone who would not hurt a child and someone who had that propensity to do so.
Well, one of the things is, as I mentioned to you, most of these guys are the preferential child molesters are psychopaths, and in their lifetime, they wind up on average molesting 150 children. The way you can identify them is mostly with the character qualities that they have, and with a psychopath, they mimic the positive character qualities that normal people have. You know, like normally, if you have protective qualities like somebody who's self-sacrificing or humble, or they take ownership when things go wrong, they're truthful, cooperative, they're engaged with whatever job they have, they're engaged, they're thoughtful, compassionate, and they tend to be repentant when they do something wrong. On the psychopathic side, you've got people who are more self-serving, boastful. They blame others when things go wrong. They're deceptive, manipulative. They tend to get bored with routine tasks and change things up. They're impulsive. They might move from one end of the country to another just on an impulse. They're indifferent to people's feelings, and they have no remorse. Those are the main things that you look for. Somebody that is on one side or the other, and any of those character qualities, the negative character qualities, would be a red flag. The thing that's the most recognizable of all predatory characteristics is this idea of somebody not taking responsibility when things go wrong. Even the most skilled psychopath finds it very difficult to take responsibility when bad things happen. They tend to blame other people. And so that's what, I encourage people to look in interviews of the person that's being hired, or interviews about the person that's being hired, is you ask a question like, how is he, or how is he or she when things go wrong? Then you try to explore whether or not they tend to take responsibility, whether they're
blame shifting.
See if they do any kind of blame shifting, like, yeah, the buck stops with me, but I never should have hired that person. If I hadn't hired him, things would have been just fine.
Yeah.
So it's my fault for hiring him. So basically, they're still blaming the other person. And so that's one of the red flags. Other red flags are behavioral kinds of red flags that you look for. Somebody that tends to rely on children. They may share confidences with a child. They might try to separate a child from other people. There's a number of things. I have a whole chart that I give out.
And that's part of your resources, right, on the Truth Alliance Foundation website.
Right. There's actually an article on there called my website called Securing Our Future, which goes right through how you identify them. TruthAllianceFoundation.org, and it's on it's in the blog. On Tom's blog, it has an article in there, Securing Our Future, and that goes through all the things, actually much more in depth than what I just said. What it doesn't go into is the problem in much depth is the reason that there's the problem that you can't screen these guys out by background investigation, and because so few of them get caught, people don't complain. Children who are sexually abused by somebody when they're a child don't realize they're sexually abused until many years later. Most of the time, these guys are so slick that the children blame themselves for the relationship.
I know this subject might be hard for people to hear. Perhaps something happened to them in their childhood and they really haven't processed it. They just wanted it to go away. But no matter how old we are, Tom, there's still things that we can do.
Really, I think people need to talk to a counselor about it. There's a number of counselors that help people deal with childhood sexual abuse. It is a tremendous problem because 20% of adults in this country were sexually exploited before they reached the age of 18, and almost half of them were exploited by an adult in the school system.
That is an incredible statistic. Say that again.
20% of adults in this country were sexually exploited as a child before they reached the age of 18. And half of them, half of those people that were sexually exploited were victims of an adult in the school system sometime between kindergarten and 12th grade.
It seems like it's a daunting task to protect a child these days, but there is things we can do. We can be involved. We can be watching and asking them if they're safe.
Right. And there's in the chart that I've got on my website, it shows some of the signs that a child is being sexually exploited. So those are the ones, or might be sexually exploited. So those are the ones that you look for that you can provide extra layers of protection to. There's also children that tend to be more vulnerable, children from single family home, single parent homes, who may be disabled in some way. They tend to, any vulnerable child like that tends to be exploited 2.5 times more than a normal child. So one of the things that parents can do is to maintain a involvement with the child's activities. Don't just cut them loose and say, it's up to you to get to your baseball practice or your baseball game, and kind of leave the kid on their own. Predators tend not to abuse children who have involved parents.
What do you see as the current state of some of these organizations, schools, and other places in protecting our children?
It's pretty abysmal, actually. There's very little that's being done in the schools, and there's even less that's being done in churches and nonprofit organizations that work with children, child-serving organizations of all kinds. The protecting the children is the last thing on the minds of people because it is just an extra cost to them.
Yeah.
The background, like I said, the background checks don't screen out 98% of the predators. Yeah. 98% of the predators will walk right through it. Yeah, they don't get caught. Now, how good a system do you have when 98% of the people that are sexually exploiting children are not getting caught? It's a pretty pathetic system.
As believers in Christ, we want to set up an environment that will protect our children. So what can churches do, Tom, to really get on top of this?
Actually, Carol Shakeshaft, she did an investigation back in 2004 that showed that 9.6% of the children in schools are victims of educator sexual misconduct. And one of the things that she talked about, among the things she talked about, were training for the teachers and also setting up a system within schools to collect information of concerns and suspicions about teachers that they could take. In other words, basically a system to collect concerns or red flags that they have about teachers. And those are the same kind of things that you should be doing in churches. And they just aren't doing them. So, and I've identified these red flags that people can use to begin looking for people who are not suited to work with children. Now, just because there's a red flag doesn't mean the person is sexually abusing a child. But in my way of thinking is people don't have a right to work with children. Children need to be guided by somebody who is a good role model. They don't need to be guided by somebody who has emotional problems of their own.
I know we're putting a lot of information out there, but again, all this can be accessed through Tom's website, Truth Alliance Foundation.
I do consulting for organizations too as to how to set up a program, and it's really not that difficult. But it does one thing: you have to do the background investigations, and you have to do them right. Like if you did a background investigation and not just looking for criminal convictions or incidents where the person has been caught, but look for the things that I teach people to look for, you'll screen out almost 100% of these guys.
When I was working in the children's church area of our church, I also heard a statistic that a lot of the perpetrators are actually being implemented by children who were abused, and now they're acting out what happened to them onto other children.
Yeah, there's been a dramatic increase in children on children sexual exploitation. So that I haven't even dealt with that yet in what I've talked about here. Child predators are getting younger and younger, so that they're kids that are even in sixth grade are starting to exhibit very predatory behavior toward younger children.
Yeah.
A lot of that is also in part because of these depraved sex education programs that are being introduced in schools. They actually, under the what's called the National Sex Ed Standards, they actually have specific times that you're supposed to teach kids about different kinds of sexual activity.
Let's talk about how libraries are now being used to stir up these desires in these young people by some of the resources that are being made available to them.
I don't know exactly when it started in terms of them being sponsoring books that are totally depraved for children, totally inappropriate for children, but they have as their national policy a provision that says any library should make available to everybody, no matter what age, any material that's in the library. So no matter what it is, they want children to be able to have access to it. And so you have these libraries that are allowing books like Gender Queer, All Boys Aren't Blue, This Book Is Gay, The Perks of Being a Wallflower, Flamer. All of these books are just completely inappropriate for children. They characterize it as an attempt to ban books when, in fact, what parents want to do is keep these age-inappropriate books away from their children. And this simply is not being done. And the American Library Association promotes libraries to allow these books to be part of the collection for children. I think that the most proactive thing people can do is to have normal people that have some common sense run for school boards and for library boards, and so that these policies by the American Library Association will be rejected in our schools and local libraries. Instead, put some sanity in it and have sections that are for adults only.
Yeah.
And not allow children in there. The American Library Association doesn't want that to happen. You know, Illinois is one of the 42 states that has an obscenity exemption for librarians and for teachers. In other words, if a librarian or a teacher shows a child something that's obscene, they can't be prosecuted for it in Illinois.
Amazing.
And the Library Association and the teachers' unions are fight tooth and nail to make sure that exemption stays in there. So they know these are obscene materials.
Yeah.
They just think it's right for children to be able to see them. Well, I think it's up to a parent to decide when a child is ready to be looking at adult-themed materials.
And as believers, we know this material is depraved, it's debauchery, it's just filth, and no one should be looking at it.
And yet,
that's right, it is.
We know the enemy of our soul came to steal, kill, and destroy, and that's what he wants to do. Take their innocence, take away their normal producing of hormones and sexual energy for what is God's given appetite for marital harmony and success. So it is so sad.
That's right. And one of the main responsibilities of a parent is to protect childhood innocence. And that, since schools have been really retained by parents to teach their children on their behalf, that's one of the main responsibilities of schools as well. And they just aren't doing it. Well, and we're hiring the wrong people to be teachers too. There was a friend of mine and I give talks on stolen innocence, about how to protect childhood innocence in the schools. And I use a clip from this psychologist that said who had been involved in schools for about 15 years. And he said he's in all of these schools that he's been part of, there are some teachers in there who are so unwell that he wouldn't trust them to water his plants. Mm. And yet we are hiring them. We have hired them to be teachers for our children. Now, there's something terribly wrong with that.
Maybe for some of our listeners, this is just almost a first pass, even thinking about child sexual exploitation, and now it's stirred up something within them where they want to help their church. They want to help other organizations begin to think about protecting the kids and spotting predators. Do you, Tom, go out and do seminars and any kind of on-site training?
Yeah, I give seminars on how to spot predators and how to set up these kinds of programs. I consult with that, and a friend of mine and I also give these presentations on stolen innocence, where we go over all of the different problems that are going on in the schools and how to address them, what parents can do to deal with them. I do a lot of that.
And if someone just joined us and are hearing a conversation and they want to get more information and contact you, Tom, how would they do so?
I have a website, truthalliancefoundation.org, no spaces, and I have a blog on that. I also have a Substack with all my articles on it. Thomas Hampson, I think, is just all you have to do is look up on Substack, Thomas Hampson. And my articles are also on the Illinois Family Institute website, and I have an author page on there.
Thank you so much, Tom, for coming on Mark and Friends and just opening our eyes, making us more aware of how we can help protect the most vulnerable among us. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up tomorrow on Mark and Friends, it's Mark sitting down with Pastor Jason and the team that meet in Champaign, and they record their Bible study, and then we get to be blessed by it here on Friday. Hey, don't forget, any program you hear on Mark and Friends can be accessed on our website. Just click on the Mark and Friends tab, and then you're going to see them all listed in the MP3 format, and this goes back for years. So there's a lot of great listening as you access the Mark and Friends program.